Welcome, dumbheads, to MDC, Mega Dumbcast. In this podcast, we are examining every single goddamn page of Palladium's Ninjas and Super Spies to determine what is the dumbest thing on that page. Every episode is one page, every episode is short. If you'd like to play along at home, this is the revised Ninjas and Super Spies 7th printing from May 2000. Today we're discussing page 163 of Ninjas and Super Spies. The page starts with some talk about potential cures for Dimmock, the dreaded Death Touch. There are lots of ideas here. I'm not really going to talk about them. It's pretty basic storytelling stuff. You know, there's a secret bush that you have to climb a mountain to go get it. If you've ever had to go on a quest to cure a king or some bullshit in Final Fantasy, you understand how to tell this story. You got to go to the ends of the earth. There's going to be great sacrifice. Palom and Porom are probably going to get wrecked, etc., etc. More interestingly, this page begins the conversion notes for bringing the magic of Ninjas and Super Spies to other game lines under the Palladium umbrella. So we're going to start the conversion rule discussion with conversion to the Palladium fantasy role-playing game. The first thing to know is that you can't just do it willy-nilly. As the rules say here, quote, adding the martial arts forms from Ninjas and Super Spies can add an interesting twist to any Palladium RPG fantasy campaign. However, the characters in Ninjas and Super Spies are designed to hold their own in a Heroes Unlimited or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle campaign, so they're far too powerful for the fantasy game. The following ancient martial artist OCC should be allowed as player characters in a Palladium RPG campaign. So we're not really bringing characters straight over from Ninjas and Super Spies as much as we're adding a new occupational character class to the fantasy game, ancient martial artist. And this new OCC has access to martial arts from Ninjas and Super Spies, but not all of them. First of all, the ancient martial artist gets only one martial art form, which means that your premium gold card martial arts that cost two martial arts selections, like ninjutsu, like Thai kickboxing, are not available to the ancient master. But other than the martial arts that cost two selections, all of the martial arts are theoretically available, but it's case by case, down to the GM's decision. The rules offer some good choices. Cha Chuan Kung Fu, it offers as a good choice for fantasy play, presumably since they ride horses, Choi Li Fut Kung Fu, Tei, and Zanji Shinjinkan Ryu, which you'll recall is the martial arts style of samurai swordsmanship. But if there's one thing that the equipment section taught us between the psychological stress evaluator, the mysterious world of lockpicking, this game isn't about hard and fast rules. It's about what you can get away with under your GM's nose. This whole game is like Hogan's Heroes, and your GM is Colonel Klink, and you are Colonel Hogan, and this whole metaphor would have been dated at the time of Ninjas and Super Spies' original publication. I don't know how I know about Hogan's Heroes, but anyway, my point is, it's up to you to figure out which martial art is going to be most effective in a fantasy campaign, and then convince the GM to let you take it. Now, just below the entry for the ancient martial artist OCC, there is a picture of some armored wolf-looking hooligans, possibly bandits, possibly soldiers, the sort of thing you would presumably fight as a martial artist in a fantasy campaign. And that's really the key question. We've been talking about martial arts and guns and international espionage for a long time now, throughout this book. But we've always been talking about killing other humans. What about killing monsters? Which martial art excels at killing monsters? Now that question is not really in my purview here on MDC. So I decided to reach out into the world of other short, frequently updated role-playing game podcasts to get some inspiration on solving this puzzle. And I turned to Monster Man. Monster Man is a short podcast, comes out multiple times a week, where a guy named James Holloway sort of reviews the monsters from the original D&D Monster Manual. I enjoy Monster Man, I listen to it anyway, and so I thought, why don't I take the monsters from the most recent episode of Monster Man and try to determine which martial art form would be best for killing those monsters, or otherwise defeating those monsters. I am leaving open the possibility of, for example, using Arts of Invisibility to evade them, or using Dragon Chi to pump up your MA, seduce them and fuck them next to a waterfall. Whatever gets you out of trouble. I'm going to proceed as though you know what these monsters are. If you don't, you can go listen to James talking about them on Monster Man. That is monsterman.libsyn.com. The episode I'm talking about is episode 13. So all right, the first monster is Displacer Beast. Already we got a tough one to fight for a martial artist, because you're really relying on that parrying, right? You're in there with your bare hands or your sword or whatever. You're trying to block shots as they come in. A lot of intricate hand motions, as you know if you've ever watched a kung fu movie. That's going to be difficult against an opponent whose physical image is 3 feet away from you. This is going to be like trying to play Tekken by watching the other person's controller instead of the screen. Unless we can find some martial arts trick to get through the Displacer Beast's natural defense. And in fact, there are some promising techniques. You'll recall that there is Open Hand Atemi, which you can use to clap your opponent to death if you are a technical pacifist. Very much in keeping with the traditional prohibition against clerics drawing blood in fantasy games. Like, my god disapproves of violence, therefore he demands that I beat you to death with a sack of oranges. Because that's like better optics for our religion of love. Or Kyaijutsu, a martial arts technique where you can use your vigorous martial arts yelling to kill people. Both of these are techniques where you wouldn't necessarily have to know exactly where the thing is at or do any kind of hand-eye coordination intensive attack on them. And it allows you to keep your distance so that the Displacer Beast can't tear you apart while appearing to be across the room. You can just stand in totally the other corner and clap it or scream it to death safely. Choi Le Phut, sadly, cannot learn either of these techniques, so I'm afraid we have to scratch it off the list. But all the other three recommendations from the game are good. They can all learn deadly martial arts yelling, so they can handle a Displacer Beast. Next up is the genie, and this is trickier. You really want to outsmart a genie. You don't want to have to fight it straight up. And this is where we don't want to be stuck with a boring martial art that does nothing but kicking and punching. We want a martial art where your enlightenment also allows you to trick people, climb walls, fly around, you know, kung fu as the uber skill. What we really want is Dragon Chi from Chi Mastery. Pump up your MA, and instead of trying to intimidate the genie, charm the genie. In keeping with today's Nick at Night theme, I will point you to the towering literary source for the modern djinn, I Dream of Genie. If that bland motherfucker can win a genie's love and loyalty with just a snappy suit and nothing else going on, you can do it with chi powers. The only way I can see this going wrong is if you run into a genie underground where there's not a lot of chi to tap into. But because genies are elemental spirits in D&D, you're more likely to meet them at a volcano, on a windy mountaintop, or even, in the case of a water elemental, at a waterfall. And somewhere like that, they're going to be putty in your hands. Now, samurais, practitioners of Zanji Shinjinkan Ryu, actually do get chi mastery starting at third level. So if you can wait it out until then, you can just about make it, and you can make a samurai who is not only a master swordsman, but dapper as hell. He's got that deadly yell or that deadly clap for dealing with displacer beasts. And when he meets a genie in a place of natural beauty, he can turn on the charm, you know, go from shonen to shoujo mode, start bringing those cherry blossoms down, and charm or seduce his way out of any encounter with an elemental spirit. So far, samurai is looking like the best bet. The next quote-unquote monster is the dog, and that's not too much of a challenge. Any of these martial artists are pretty much going to be able to handle a dog. Initially, you would think that the next quote-unquote monster in the monster manual, the dolphin, would be a similar situation. But in fact, I'd say you're most likely to meet a dolphin in the water. Now, you might roll a dolphin on the random encounter chart in any situation, but, you know, if you run into a dolphin in the woods, you lucked out. He's in the wrong neighborhood. You're not going to have too much difficulty. The practical problem is if you meet a dolphin at sea. And not every martial arts style is going to cope well with fighting in the water. As it turns out, though, samurais can pretty much do it. They're not overly reliant on armor. They can be proficient with spears, which are good weapons to use underwater. Now, the final monster on the list is the doppelganger. And this is where the samurai falls apart a little bit. Zanji Shinjinkan Ryu is very dependent on the sword or other weapon. Doesn't have a lot of combat techniques for unarmed and unexpected fights. Obviously, a doppelganger is going to jump you, possibly sneak up on you while you're sleeping. That's going to make it easy to get to you while you're away from your sword, and if that happens, you're probably done for as a samurai. Now, obviously, the ideal solution to your doppelganger problem, you want a Zanshin circle. You want the ability to sense threats to you within a certain radius. So what we really need is a martial art that offers Zenjiriki powers, so you can get Zanshin, and some Chi mastery, and like martial arts techniques or a Temi, and you have to be able to kill an uppity dolphin. A dolphin who's feeling froggy and decides to jump you while you're in the water. Now, I looked everywhere, and the best I could come up with was Taido. You may remember this as the glittery, twirly martial art, the one that uses the falling slash toppling technique known as hentai, which incidentally is what your game is going to look like when you throw your charming twirly martial artist at the monsters of Dungeons and Dragons. It's gonna get a little bit dragon pink in this campaign, but that's okay. The only difficulty is underwater fighting. This isn't really a style that uses a spear, and you know, a lot of punches and kicks can be hard to pull off underwater. But it says in the description of Taido, quote, movements are based on waves, tornadoes, clouds, whirlpools, and lightning. Now that jogged my memory. I seemed to remember that there's a form of kick that can be used effectively underwater. And so, dumbheads, I did some extra credit for this week. Not only did I dip into a whole other podcast and a whole other role-playing game to find some fantasy monsters to stack up Palladium martial arts against, I also consulted yet another rule system, White Wolf's Street Fighter role-playing game, where I think you will find that the whirlwind kick is described as having special effects underwater. An elaborate spinning kick, a flashy kick, a kick based on weather patterns. Does it sound familiar? It should, because that's exactly what Taido does. Chris, you couldn't possibly mean, yes, that's exactly what I mean. If you are fighting a dolphin underwater, you can flip upside down and do an inverted twirling kick that will not only slay your dolphin foes, but propel you upward through the water, your legs acting as your propeller. It takes books from three different game systems to prove it, but I believe you can kill a whole fucking boatload of dolphins with an upside down underwater tornado kick using the power of Taido. And if that conclusion were on this page, it would be the dumbest thing here. Instead, I think I'm going to have to go for the more prosaic answer, which is that the dumbest thing on this page is that it clearly has very strong ideas about which martial arts you should be allowed to transport to the fantastical past, but leaves it mostly up to your discretion and gives you no criteria for why being a samurai in the past is aces, but being a ninja in the past must never be achieved under any circumstances. This leaves us with no guidance about whether Taido would be appropriate. So I'm going to say try it and have fun twirling your way across the countryside, clapping at displacer beasts, fucking genies, and kicking the shit out of dolphins. Join me next time when we talk about transplanting martial arts into the superhero genre on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. Contact or check out the podcast wherever you want. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. MDC, Palladium Books, Ninjas and Super Spies, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Ciambietta. This slightly annoying theme song is Cartoon Battle by Kevin MacLeod, whose work you can find at Incompetech.com. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.